Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with Coach Daniel Joris. Daniel shared with us his strategies for getting fit and lean, why fitness also helps you feel happier, and tips for healthy travels. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now on to my conversation with Daniel. Daniel Joris, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Lisa. Appreciate it.
It's my absolute pleasure. I'm really, really excited to talk about all things training and traveling and nutrition, maybe a little bit as well. But before we do, what is the main thing you're excited for our listeners to learn today?
I think I'm excited for people to learn about maybe a different way to think about their workouts, going a little bit deeper than some of the surface level. I mean, one thing that I'm always talking about is getting super clear on what is actually happening versus what we think is happening. And to give a big overview of that, it's kind of the idea of or similar to, I eat super healthy. And it's like, yeah, that's great. But if you were eating super healthy, you wouldn't be experiencing, weight gain and other issues that you claim to be experiencing. So it's like one of these things is true, and it's not like your fault that something is happening, but it is kind of your responsibility to fix the issue. So that's kind of where my head goes.
I love it because, yeah, I think having clarity and being honest with ourselves on like, do our actions really match our goal and where we want to go? Or are we just telling ourselves a little story? So, yeah, I'm excited to explore that a bit more. And can you share with us what made you get into coaching and why you do what you do today?
For sure. I'll try and keep the story short-ish so we don't spend too much time on it. I played a lot of sports growing up. Soccer was the main thing that I played in and excelled at to a degree and, trained in specifically and all that stuff. Played a little bit of everything. And I got a lot of injuries, mostly knee injuries, but I was injured every like 4 months kind of thing from the time I was 11 till, I stopped playing when I was like 18 or 19. And, when you get injured a lot, you spend a lot of time in physio clinics and doctor's offices and these kind of things. And I got interested in the human body and just how it works and like why does my body keep breaking and learn and start to learn about anatomy and physiology and these kind of things. And then that led me to do a degree in kinesiology. And I always knew that I wanted to help people and be involved in medicine or rehabilitation or fitness or some conglomeration of all of those things. And then that led me into coaching people and starting to be able to give back, all the things that I learned and how it improved my life and through the injuries and stuff that I went through and through the frankly negative experiences I had with my injuries and healing from my injuries. But I learned a lot of positive lessons that have given me a what I think is a good outlook on life and a good outlook on fitness as it pertains to the rest of our life. And so that's the short version of how I got into all this.
Awesome. And yeah, it actually brings me to a question I was going to ask you anyway. You mentioned several injuries there and so on. Nowadays, as a coach, what's your philosophy when it comes to training around injuries, through injuries, when sick and so on? What do you normally recommend?
Yeah, great question. I still pick up injuries like far too often. And for what it's worth, almost never in the gym. They're always like other stuff. If I'm playing sports with my friends or like just doing, regular life things and I just manage to like tweak things here and there. Like in the gym when you're kind of being careful, even if you're pushing it pretty hard, it's actually kind of difficult to get like real injuries in my experience. But I always say this, when you get injured, you get one day to be a suck about it, to just be like upset and beat yourself up and feel bad for yourself and be a cranky baby. And then you gotta get to work. So by get to work, I mean, be aggressive with your actual rehabilitation. And whether that means seeing a physiotherapist or an athletic therapist or whoever your favorite therapist is, and getting some manual work done or rehab exercises if it's like a familiar injury, something to you. But be very aggressive with that because the faster you get it done, the faster you can get past it, and the faster you can kind of just move on with your life and get back to normal training. But with everything else that you've got going, with the rest of your body, you can continue training. So just because you hurt your ankle doesn't mean you can't, do lat pull downs or something like that. So use the opportunity to double down on maybe some of the stuff that you've been missing or been wanting to kind of excel in. If you, again, you get a lower body injury, like you're just going to spend more time training your upper body. It'll do a couple of things. And please feel free to interrupt me if I'm rambling too much here. But one, it keeps your habit of exercise and just like being in your healthy lifestyle kind of thing. So even though you might not be training legs, and I'll just keep running with the lower body injury example. You might not be training your legs, you're still training your upper body. So you're still in the habit of going to the gym, of eating healthy, of having your making sure you're having your protein and doing all the fitness stuff. Two, it'll just like protect your mental health, and which is also part of your identity, which is important for all of our life. But especially when you like when you reach a certain level within your fitness journey, you and I think we all, I'll speak for all coaches here, like we all want our clients to identify themselves eventually as I am a fit person. And what fit people do is exercise and do all the fitness things. And then when that gets taken away from you, it's really hard. And so if you hurt your ankle and now you've spent 3 years grinding to become this fit person, and all of a sudden it's taken away from you, it can be really hard to get that back. So by even staying in the gym, if all you do is go to the gym and do bicep curls, like, that's not the greatest training program in the world, but if it's at least keeping up your habit, then fine, then we'll take it. So my biggest advice is just like just do what you can, but then the tactical advice as to your specific injury, be very aggressive and technical with healing that and attacking it as fast as you can, without rushing, but like move quickly but don't rush kind of thing. That way you can just kind of get over it and move on with your life. Like waiting and resting is rarely going to be the right option, and as rarely is it going to be the thing that actually heals your injury.
Well, Daniel, I love that you brought up just the point of like keeping up with that consistency of going to the gym, because we know that one thing is really keeping people from seeing success in the long run or maintaining success is like when you break a habit and you have to start back up. It's so much harder to get back into a hard ha habit than it is to just maintain something at a minimal level. And I try to tell myself that also when it comes to like meditation. And even if I'm like really quote unquote busy one day or just, not wanting to meditate at all, I'm like, come on, Lisa, just do 1 minute or like whatever the thing might be. And at least with that, you're like also proving to yourself exactly to your point, like you are the person that goes to the gym. I am the person that meditates. I am, like it is maintaining that part of your identity. So really, really like it. And now I guess going into the part of like training when we're healthy, you have in your bio as well that you help people look jacked and lean, and I guess the more female equivalent to that is like defined and toned and lean. So is there something you believe people get wrong when it comes to the pursuit of becoming jacked and lean?
Great question. I mean, I think people get things wrong all the time, but not on purpose. And I'm really thinking as I'm saying this right now. So I'm kind of just saying extra words to buy myself time to think.
Perfectly fine.
I think that people get things wrong in that they probably the biggest thing is that they assume that what worked for other people will work for them. And to like to a degree, it's true. I mean, we don't as humans, we don't all operate on different like rules of physiology or like physics. Like we all follow the same rules of biology. But within that, we're all different sizes, we have different outputs, we have different stressors on our lives, we have like all these different other intangible things. So the basic rule of a calorie deficit is going to work for 100% of human beings. But the exact strategies that I use, that you use, and that anyone else uses to be and stay in a calorie deficit are going to be different. And that's where the disconnect is. So it's like, hey, Susie, followed this diet. She ate, exactly 17 almonds for lunch and one hard-boiled egg and, whatever the things that she did is, and it worked for her. Look how great Susie is. She thinks she feels amazing, all this stuff. That's awesome. If I try and do that, it won't work for me because my life is just different than Susie's. Not because those foods won't work for me or that calorie, the calorie numbers and stuff might not work for me because we're different sizes and that. But even that aside, it's just like we have different things going on in our life that will make what she did more difficult to, more difficult for me to actually stick to. And that's maybe the biggest disconnect, just copying people without realizing or thinking about why did it work for them.
I love it. Yeah, absolutely. I think that adherence piece is so underrated. We're like, what works for my lifestyle? And I would even add to that, sometimes we neglect like what was working for us in the past versus 20 years later. Because like someone who is at university, 21 years old, and they might be totally fine training 6 days a week, really high intensity, pushing themselves because they don't have a whole lot going on other than studying and sleeping and training. But fast forward, that same person at 45 might think, well, that worked for me in the past. I'll just do that. Why is that not working for me anymore? Why am I seeing different results? And they're neglecting, well, A, the aging, and B, exactly what you said, like stress plays a big role. Now they have three kids, they have a full-time job, they have like, no wonder your body is not responding the same way than it did in the past. So it is always moment individualized and also at the same time, like situation appropriate.
That's why I try to be very educational with my clients. And the reason is because I don't expect, or nor do I really want anyone to stay with me for forever. Like eventually I want you to kind of like not need me. Maybe just like for, very brief check-ins and that kind of stuff, like over time. But like after 6 months, a year or so of talking about calorie deficits and nutrition and stuff, it's like there's not that much to talk about. Like it's, I told you know all the things. Now it's just about accountability. And so where I'm going with this is like, I want that client who comes to me when they're 30 and they lose weight and have a great experience. Well, what happens when they're 45? They want to be able, I want them to understand why what they did worked so that they can adapt it later in their life so that it will work again. And because the base principles are always the same, it's just how you go about implementing those strategies is the thing that's going to change.
Very, very cool. I love that you're coming from an education perspective as opposed to just giving someone a training plan, nutrition plan, and be like, okay, follow this without explaining the why or how to modify it. And so I guess speaking about principles there when it comes to training and so on, you, for instance, you have a free workout program as well as I assume personalized, individualized programs. What tends to be the basis of these programs when you create them? Do you have specific principles in mind, or strategies that you follow?
I definitely do. And I think that the way to kind of explain it, not that it's like so complicated, like training is not that complicated. So maybe that's that. But it's kind of like the basics performed extremely well and like relentlessly consistently. But a little bit more technical and less kind of up in the air is I tend to focus on strength and mobility. And the way that I emphasize that is by being a bit of a stickler for people using full range of motion and just good form in general. And then what that does is it helps you build strength, but also helps you build like or improve your mobility at the same time, which is what a lot of people are kind of looking for. People just want to feel better. I'm personally not training people who are like competitive or professional bodybuilders or power lifters or anything like that. If I was, it would be maybe a little bit different. But your general population person, which is kind of what I am, you want to look better, you want to build some muscle, you want to lose some fat, and you want to feel better. And so a lot of that is mobility as well. But how boring is it to just do like a stretching routine for half an hour, 3 times a week? Like, no one's going to follow that. I wouldn't even follow that. And who has that much time to train? Because you still got to do your strength training, you still got to do some cardio, and you still have to like live the rest of your life. So I found that by using intelligent programming and just like forcing kind of going through full ranges of motion, and full range of motion is a subjective term. It's whatever you have access to, and maybe we can talk about it, maybe not. It will improve your mobility in and of itself. So it's a focus on strength, and then the mobility kind of comes as as an aside with that. And then whether someone wants to gain muscle or lose fat, we're going to really manipulate that with the eating, but the training for the most part is going to stay the same for most people.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that you are also focused on range of motion. And just out of curiosity, well, I assume you work with many people remotely. So how do you assess their full range of motion or their range of motion?
I'll just have them send like record themselves doing an exercise and
Gotcha.
send videos. And so there's like a couple, like the main one would be like a split squat, kind of like a knees over toes guy or whatever. And it's funny because so I learned it that way, like through people who also were trained by Charles Poliquin, and so did he. And so it was kind of funny to me when that was starting to get like really popular. It was like, oh, we've been like doing this in the gym for years, but I'm happy that it is. So that's pretty much like the biggest one, but then just even like they're bench pressing, they're like pulling motions, RDLs, like kind of the big movement patterns. I'll kind of pick a few exercises based on what they want to improve and based on their body, and be like, hey, just send me videos of these regularly, and then I can use that as a proxy. Like if you're doing like good form on those exercises, which are maybe a little bit more technically proficient. Or require, sorry, some more technical proficiency, and you're doing them well and doing them through a full range of motion, I can be pretty sure that you kind of get the whole point. And like at some point with online training, like if you're just sandbagging the rest of the workout and like doing half reps, like I mean, I can't control that, so it is what it is, but I communicate the importance of it to them, and they see the difference in the results from it.
Yeah, I would assume so. I mean, I think just having access to full range of motion is so important. I think over the recent years, sort of like partial range of motion training and whatnot has kind of become a big discussion. And people like, do you even need to train full range of motion? But it's not, I think having a combination of both, there's nothing wrong with integrating a little bit of partial range of motion training and so on. But you should have access to your full range of motion, or at least work on that. So that's kind of my take on it. And I'm curious, like, if you have or had a client who would come to you and would say, I have been strength training for a while. I feel like I have stagnated. I'm not seeing any progress. Should I add? Or when should I add reps or sets or volume? Like, how do I know what I'm stuck on? How do you go about that?
So I would just get very clear about, and yes, I have had clients like this, just to answer your question, but I'll get super clear about what it is that what they want. Like, what is it that you're chasing? Are you trying to get stronger? And then how are you measuring that? And then we can look at, well, what has your training been like? And is it conducive to your goal? Because if your goal is to get stronger and you're doing, you know, you claim that your goal is to get stronger, and you're doing, you know, all these kind of HIIT circuit style workouts, it's like, well, yeah, you're like your squat, bench, deadlift, whatever, it's not gonna increase by doing those style of workouts. And that doesn't make them bad. It just makes them not related to the goal that you claim to have. And so one, we have to get super clear on what the goal is. Then two, we look at the training program and say, well, what can we change? Maybe you've been following the same training program for like 3 months or 6 months, and you're just like so bored of it that you're just not even trying that hard at it anymore. Your motivation is so low that you're just not fired up to go to the gym, and so you just don't push that hard because, like, well, you know, kind of bored of this, and I don't have a high training motivation. So we can change the training for that alone. But two, we can also look at, well, what are the exercises that you have been doing, and are there any gaps in maybe specific like movement patterns or aspects of your range of motion that are being missed, and maybe that's kind of like the weak link in what you're trying to accomplish here. So to sum it up, like I would just look at their training program, what they've been doing. And by the way, if you don't have a like this would be the most common occurrence in this situation. Say, I've been trying all this stuff and it's like it's not working. It's like, okay, show me what you've been doing. Oh, well, I go to the gym 3 times a week and I like do lower body. I'm like, okay, yeah. But show me like your workouts. Show me what you've been doing. Oh, well, I do legs on Monday and I do upper body on Wednesday. And it's like, okay, I need to see your workout log. And like, I don't have one. Like, well, that's problem number one. Like, we need to create a workout program and we need to start tracking your workouts, because you can't tell me that things are not working if we don't even have a way of measuring them. So that is really what it mostly ends up being, is like, we can get super technical about why things might be working or might not be working, but mostly it ends up that, like, for one reason or another, you're not following any program and you're not tracking the program. So you don't really know whether it's working or not.
Yeah, you can't change what you're not aware of, right? So creating that awareness are really important. And I think this goes right back to what you were saying as a goal of this conversation in the beginning, like just having that clarity of is what I'm doing actually matching my goal. And I quite often, like I see that in several ways as well. So for instance, if someone says hypertrophy is my goal and all over the internet, they hear they need to add weight all the time and get stronger and so on. I'm like, not necessarily. Like, as a bodybuilder, they are not necessarily always adding weight. You don't need to add weight to all your lifts all the time and then be surprised that you're getting injured or having nervous system fatigue or whatever. Like, no, that's just like blend out what you're hearing all over the internet. Does that actually apply to you? Yes or no? No. Okay, let's move on. And on the other spectrum where I hear that quite often, like I'm stuck or where I'd see that goals don't necessarily match what you're doing, is people saying, I want to look more defined, or women more specifically saying, I want to look more defined and toned. But they're so terrified of increasing their food, so terrified of changing, I guess, almost anything in regards to nutrition or so, like, or even changing up their strength training because they're afraid of getting too jacked then. Like, I wanna look toned, but I don't wanna look too muscly. I'm like, if we ever got to that point, we could still dial it back. Don't worry about that. But in order to actually look more defined, you're probably gonna have to weigh a little bit more. And we're gonna have to add some food. You're not gonna just put on a bunch of fat if you're training appropriately. Do you see that as well in some of your clients?
Yeah, absolutely, and especially more so in my female clients. The way that I attempt to explain this and kind of make it make sense is that muscle is the thing that will give your body shape. So no matter what, like, weight you're at, if you want to look toned and defined, well, you can lose as much fat as you want, but say you lost like all the body fat that you had, like all of it, you would look like skin and bones. Like, that's not a look that anyone is really going after either. And so, well, how do you fix that then? We can't really target where we lose or where we gain fat. And this is an important distinction in this conversation, because why would you want to gain fat? Well, I want to have a bigger butt. I want to have whatever. You can't just add fat to your butt and not to your stomach. So what can we do? We can build muscle, and we can target where we build muscle by training those muscles. Like, there's a very simple equation there. So yes, you want to lose body fat to reveal the muscle, but if there's no muscle there to be revealed, once all the body fat's gone, your skin and bones, and that's not the look that you're after either. So you're looking for a look that does have muscle. And to your point, you're not going to get bulky. I mean, lots of us are trying our damn hardest to get big and too bulky and not succeeding at it, men and women alike. So it's not going to happen by accident. I promise you that. But really, the biggest thing here is understanding that the look that you're after, or sorry, that muscle is what gives your body shape, and that is what is going to define the look that you're after. It's not just, it is about losing weight, but it's not just about losing body fat.
100%. I think you stated that very nicely. And Daniel, before we started recording, you actually shared with me that you've just traveled quite a bit. And I would love to hear your strategies for just maintaining a health or fitness routine, so to speak, while traveling, and especially as we're like entering summer, people are probably on the road a little bit. So maybe you have some tips here.
Well, If you, so the part that I didn't share with you before about my travel is that I did nothing to maintain my my fitness on this trip. Now, this trip was it was a month long. It was a honeymoon trip. It was a kind of a once in a lifetime type trip, just for people listening. So like I didn't go out of my way to work out. I didn't go out of my way to like eat healthy. I gained body fat. Like it from a health and fitness perspective wasn't a great trip that way. But I mean, other times I travel, it doesn't happen every single time I travel, obviously. I would say this, depending on the length of your vacation, like actually just not caring is also okay. If you're trying to be like super shredded and like really dialed, like obviously you're not going to just not care. But if you're a regular person, quote unquote, and you're going to go on vacation for a week or 2 weeks, you can just kind of let loose, and it's very much okay. You might gain a little bit of body fat. You might feel a little like flat and soft because you're not having a pump anymore. But that doesn't mean you gained like 19 pounds and you'll never lose it again. Like you just get right back in the gym after you come back from your vacation. So I know that's kind of like contrary to advice while traveling, but it's a very much a real life situation where sometimes like you can like go hard when it's time to go hard. And when it's time to just like rest and chill and enjoy your vacation with your friends or family or whatever, then just do that and worry about your fitness later. If you're worrying about your fitness the rest of the year, you don't need to be stressed about it the couple weeks of the year that you're on vacation.
I'm
Now,
just
if you
going
do
to
want to just,
interject here very quickly because I think, especially like the people listening, as I said to you, often are more on the side of like doing too much. So, almost taking like a quote unquote forced deload in the sense of a vacation. I have heard so many times that people come back like after a few days stronger or like feeling even better because they were quote unquote forced to take a bit of a time off that they normally would not.
Yeah, absolutely. Like deloads are, I think they're a little bit overutilized for like Gen Pop people because like life will give you deloads naturally. Vacation, things at work, things with your kids, like things just happen. Like if you're a, a professional or competing athlete, you need to kind of program those in. But for the rest of us, like just let it happen naturally. But take the rest. Like part of going hard in the gym and being like disciplined about your training and all the stuff is also going hard at resting. Like when it's time to rest, like you need to just chill. You need to just do nothing, not rest and oh, I'll just go to the gym and I'll just do like 18,000 steps. Like that's not resting. Like you need to do nothing. That's what resting is. And so sometimes you need that. Now, not every single day, but you need that as well. So for sure, a strategy for vacation is like just like do whatever you got to do. Don't eat more food than you would normally and like indulge for the sake of indulgence. Like if there's some really good food or some good desserts and drinks and stuff, like by all means, like do your thing. But don't go overboard just for the sake of going overboard because it's a vacation, right? But if there's stuff you want to indulge in, by all means. Then get back on track afterwards. As far as like actual tactics, if you do want to stay a little bit on track, having a good set, like a good kind of no equipment, like home hotel room workout routine is just on hand is always a good tactic. And for me, it'll just be like push-ups and squats, and I'll just like do a bunch of those back and forth, and that'll be something that I'll do. As far as nutrition, and this is assuming, sorry, on the training side, I'm jumping all over the place a little bit, but on the training side, if you do have a hotel gym, like get good at understanding how you can do limited workouts with limited equipment and with limited time, and understanding that the point of your workout on vacation is not necessarily to make progress, but it's just to like get a pump and feel good. And so the workout that you're doing doesn't matter. Like go to the gym, do some bicep curls, some, whatever they have there. It doesn't even matter. It can be 20 minutes, just get your heart rate up, get a pump and get out. And that's the point of the workout. And so again, keeping the goal, right? You're not going on vacation to hit PRs. You're going on vacation to go on vacation. But a home workout will, or a hotel room, no equipment workout will serve the same purpose, right? Getting your heart rate up, making you feel good, keeping the habit, all that good stuff. On the nutrition side of things is you can, you, I want to say that you can use fasting this is like a time where you could do that, where, maybe you skip breakfast if the breakfast isn't good, but some places have like phenomenal breakfast, and like that's what you want to skip, what you don't want to skip. So I'm trying to weigh this against like just enjoy yourself. That's my actual advice, is just enjoy yourself. But if you do, again, want to stay on track, like fill up on protein and protein and veggies, and then like leave your dinners a little bit more free. That'll probably be a decent way to travel. And if it's like not pleasure travel, it's more like for work or something like that, then like go grocery shopping, get grocery delivery, buy some yogurts or some deli meats or some fruits and get them delivered to your hotel room. That's a really easy way to just kind of stay on track, or some ready-made protein shakes, things like that. You just got to do a little bit of planning ahead of time, and so really that's the thing. But that's differentiating between like travel for business or travel for pleasure as well. So
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you said. The listeners will know that like I'm a digital nomad, so I actually travel a lot, and I would totally agree with what you said in the sense of don't compare my travel style with yours. If your vacation is like the first vacation that you've had in two years, and it's your only family vacation that you have for a week, and whatever. And I travel once a month, and I plan where I stay around, like where's the closest gym, and limit myself to ordering or eating out once a day. For you, that is very, very different. But I think what I'm hearing you say, or what I think is a good message as well, is if you want to stay a little bit consistent, especially if you're traveling frequently for work and so on, there is a way. And don't just get into like victim mindset of like, oh, I can't. I nowadays with like delivery services and like even just body weight things and so on, there's always something you can do if you want to. And I think COVID has shown us that as well. Like th there were a lot of people that made gains with calisthenics workouts during that time, or just at least stayed fit and didn't use that as an excuse. So really good. I do think that as we travel, it is always easy to get come by carbs and fats, and not so easy to come by proteins and fiber. So traveling with like some supplements or protein powders or protein bars is often very helpful. I also know you have like a little bit of a protein cheat sheet that that people can get access to. What are some tips to get to your protein goal just in on a day-to-day basis, yet outside of travel?
The biggest thing I think is actually, this is the reason why this is the most important tip, I think, is because it's where I've seen the greatest window for opportunity. And it's actually just increasing your protein at breakfast. Like, t people mostly will have protein at dinner and more or less have protein at lunch, but breakfast is the place where it's like we're getting 8 grams of protein. And so if we can find a way to make your breakfast 40 grams of protein, well, that's like a 30 gram increase. And that, for most people, that's like pretty significant. So the unfortunate part about this is like there are not a lot of, like, that I've found anyways, like real good hacks or tips for like increasing protein. It's like, well, find foods that have protein in them and eat more of those. But that's it. Like, that's the hack. So one, knowing which foods have protein in them. And then two, it's planning to have them on hand and planning out your meals accordingly so that you are eating them regularly and in sufficient amounts. But I think that focusing on breakfast, focusing on increasing your protein at breakfast is like the biggest opportunity place for most people. Because again, most people are doing pretty good at dinner, doing all right at lunch, but like lacking on breakfast a lot.
Yeah, I think that's very cultural. I believe the Chinese culture that you just visited and many other cultures, they're much more used to having a savory breakfast, like sort of what we would consider leftovers, like something with rice and meat in it or fish or something like that. And one of our coaches, she has a Vietnamese background, and she basically always has like shrimp or pork or whatever in her breakfast, and often gets weird comments on that. But I mean, it obviously helps you get to your protein a lot easier than like I'm German, so oftentimes a German breakfast is like a bread roll with jam, or like if you're lucky, some processed sausage on the side of that. It's like, yeah, to your point, like 8 grams of protein probably. So what I've often found, not necessarily is always the best strategy, but a helpful strategy is like just having a protein shake First thing in the morning, especially if people say, like, oh, I don't have that much appetite in the morning, or I'm working out early in the morning. Well, you can probably get down a protein shake before that, even if you're not super hungry, and it's going to be absorbed so quickly. Like, don't worry about it, right? And the nice thing about having a high protein breakfast as well is it's going to help you with blood sugar regulation and satiation for the rest of your day as well, as opposed to having like a muffin for breakfast or that sugary cereal and then spiking your blood sugar and having more sugar cravings later on in the day. So I think that's a really good tip. And to your point of like learning what's actually high in protein, no, the tablespoon of peanut butter is not your preferred protein source in your breakfast. Can we actually like track and really learn, you know, the oats are not a good protein source either.
Right.
So yes, I think the coming even here from an educational point is really, really good.
Yeah, it comes back to that awareness piece, right? It's like it's not your fault that you think that peanut butter has high protein. Like, what do you know? Like, I don't know random stuff about accounting because I just don't know about it. But it is your responsibility to like figure out these things for yourself. So we have no shortage of access to information today. You can turn around the bottle and look at how much protein is in it. You can chat GPT it, you can Google it, you can search on MyFitnessPal or Chronometer or whatever number of apps that you use, and you can find out what's in these foods. And so once you realize, oh damn, like peanut butter doesn't actually have that much protein for the amount of calories that I'm getting in it, well, what foods do have protein in it? And then you can search that and then find those and say, okay, well, maybe I'm not going to have tuna for breakfast. Okay, that's fine. I'm probably not going to have that for breakfast either. Might I have something else that has more protein? Maybe the leftovers from dinner before. Maybe it's eggs. Maybe we start with eggs and egg whites. I think to your point, and it's been my strategy as well about starting with the shake, especially for people who like barely eat breakfast. Not even a high protein breakfast. They just don't eat breakfast at all. Starting with a shake is the easiest because it's lowest barrier to entry kind of thing. And it's just unbelievably convenient. But if we get past that and we're like, okay, I want some solid food so I can have my shake later in the day type of thing. Not that you can't have two shakes a day. You definitely can do that. But then we can look at some ground beef mixed with some eggs, right? Abby, maybe take out instead of three eggs, you have two eggs plus egg whites. Now, like all of a sudden, you're very easily up to, 30 or 40, maybe even 50 grams of protein. And here's an actual little trick that I've figured out for making things taste like breakfast foods is whatever leftover type stuff you have, if you just add an egg to it automatically makes it feel like a little bit more breakfasty. Even though it might be the exact thing that you had for dinner the night before, you just throw an egg in there and you're like, oh yeah, this is breakfast. It's like salmon with egg. Like, yeah, this is breakfast because you wouldn't have salmon with egg for dinner. And so, eggs are kind of like breakfast food. Breakfast food is a made-up term. But you just add an egg to something and it feels more like breakfast. And so that'll help you get over it yourself over like, oh, I can't eat this for breakfast. This is a dinner time food. Add an egg and it'll feel like breakfast food.
That is so true, honestly. I love it. I love these tips, and I think you've really circled back to or answered the objective of this conversation today. So thank you so much for that. I'm gonna obviously make sure to put all your handles in the show notes and so on. I do have one very last question, and you have in your bio, you don't just say that you're helping people to get a lean and defined body, you also say that you're helping them to get happier. And I would love to hear why you say that or how you say that and how you achieve that with your clients.
Amazing question, and I'm happy you asked this. Circling back to the beginning of the conversation, when I was telling you a little bit about my story. Part of why I got into the fitness, I was all those injuries culminated in this like very big knee surgery that I had, and I won't explain the details of it. But in the recovery of it, I was 20 years old, and I was like an athlete. I was like super fit. I was all this stuff, and after this surgery, I wasn't able to walk. I wasn't able to even put my foot on the ground for 3 months, for 13 weeks, which is like, that's a long time, especially when you wrap your identity as a young person in being an athlete and being like this, you're the guy, and now you can't even walk. I couldn't even go to the bathroom by myself. That sucked. Now, obviously, I got better and it's all fine. But the fact that I wasn't able to use my body made my life significantly worse. And that's a microcosm because I was going to get better. But what about the person who is overweight and removes themselves or prevents themselves from engaging in activities of life, be it travel, be it playing with your kids, be it, any number of things, because you don't like the way your body looks or feels. What about the person who has chronic back pain, who, again, I can't do that, daddy can't do that, mommy can't do that, I can't go play soccer with my friends, I can't go do XYZ because my back always hurts, making your life worse. So I believe that we have a lot of problems in life, and like fitness and health is one of them, and we can solve it. And that can be like one less problem and make you happier through that. I think that getting in good shape, not elite shape, not like bodybuilder on stage, but like just getting in good shape and being healthy, will make everything else in your life better. And I wholeheartedly like believe that, not hyperbole. I think it will make everything else in your life better. And so I've seen this many times through clients where clients don't come, like I'm not a therapist, obviously. So clients don't come to me because like, oh, I want to work out because I want to be happy. Like that's not what anyone says. But people start to experience life better where they start to be more confident in their life because they like the way that they look and that they feel. Their physical pains no longer impact them. And so they're able to engage in more activities, maybe re-engage in activities that they used to do when they were younger. And that makes them happier. Your relationships become better. And you're more vibrant overall. And so this fitness thing is just this little like, yeah, we work out and we pay attention to what we eat, but it impacts every single other aspect of your life. And so then people end up reporting, yeah, I just feel amazing. People are complimenting me. Like I'm happier. I'm getting a raise at work. I'm like getting, moving up in my life. I started a new relationship, or all these other amazing things start happening because we started exercising. And so it's a few steps down the road, but it happens 100% of the time that people just become happier and more fulfilled in their life. And so that's why I throw it in there, and that's why it's really like it's an important part of what I do. And I think what we do collectively as fitness coaches is helping people, is using fitness as a way to help people improve their life. And I think we've all experienced it in various ways and from various backgrounds and from various starting points. But we've all realized that, like, yeah, like getting in shape was cool, hitting PRs was cool, like getting lean, all that stuff was cool. But like, really, it did this other thing in my life that was like literally would not have happened if I didn't get in shape. And that's the best part. And we just want to spread that to everyone else.
100%. This is so beautiful. Thank you. Not enough people, not enough coaches talk about this. So truly, thank you for all the work that you're doing. And obviously, thank you for your time today. It's been a true pleasure speaking with you.
Of course, thank you, and thank you very much for having me. This was a fun conversation. I hope it was valuable to you and to the listeners as well.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Daniel. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.